forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Ming Wei. He graduated from Harvard and MIT. He's got a medical degree. He also has a PhD in laser physics. He's a world-class cataract and LASIK eye surgeon, a philanthropist, and a community activist. He's got a really amazing story that I had heard when he was interviewed on another podcast, and he's got a movie that is imminently coming out called Sight. I think it's going to be a fascinating listen. So welcome, Dr. Wang. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, if you would, I know you've had to tell the story a million times, but can you just give a little background on yourself and how you became, you know, an eye surgeon and also a PhD in laser physics?
Sure. The film Sight, which will be released in theaters across North America on May 24th, Memorial Day weekend, is based on my autobiography, From Darkness to Sight, telling the story of a Chinese immigrant who fought challenges, difficulties during Cultural Revolution in China in the 60s and 70s, and eventually made to America in 1982. And, you know, just the life story of an immigrant trying to, you know, search for happiness and develop a career here in America as an ophthalmologist. So I grew up, Richard, in China in the 1960s during what they called Cultural Revolution. From 1966 to 1976, for that 10 years, the government in China shut down all universities and colleges of the entire nation for 10 years and forcibly deported every single high school graduate to some of the poorest part of the country and condemned each one of us a life sentence of hard labor and poverty.
Why did they do that, by the way? What was their reasoning?
My understanding is that people with knowledge and education is a threat. So they rather destroy the future, all of its young people, their educational process, so that they will not present the threat to the leaders.
And you were caught up in this. And how old were you when this started and what happened to you?
I was born in 1960. So it started when I was 6 years old, 1966, and it lasted for 10 years until 1976. In 1974, I was 14. I finished my ninth grade. I was looking forward to attending 10th grade and beyond when the deportation order came down to me as well. Just like 20 million others, I was going to be sent away to labor camp for life, to no fault of my own. In order to escape the devastating fate of being sent away to labor camp, I found out that if I could play a music instrument and Chinese violin, erhu, E-R-H-U, or if I could dance, I might be able to get into what they call a government song and dance troupe, therefore avoid being sent away to labor camp, being allowed to stay in the cities because government still needed musicians and dancers in the cities. So, but my little plan of avoiding being sent away to music and dancing did not work. And so I was going to be sent away to labor camp. Right around that time, 1976, I got lucky. Cultural Revolution ended. China woke up, realizing what a tragic mistake it has made by having shut down all universities and colleges of the entire nation for their 10 years and having destroyed the future of whole generation of young people.
So luckily, by the time it was time to go, they yeah. ended the program and saved you.
Right, exactly. Otherwise, yeah. I would have been, if I finished my junior high just a year early, I would have been sent away to a labor camp for the... So 1976, the college got reopened. In a film site, they talk about my parents came home and told me that I would be able to go back to school again. I thought I'd never be able to hear that. Ever since age 14, I got kicked out of school. I was never allowed to go to senior high. So I said, I'm going to go back to school. And my dad said, yes, tomorrow. And I asked, should I go back to ninth grade? Because 3 years ago, I was 14. I got kicked out of school after ninth grade. Now I'm 17. Should I, you know, go back to ninth or 10th or 11th? He said, none of that. You need to go back to school tomorrow, but you jump 3 years ahead overnight directly into 12th grader. And I said, why? You know, he said, only the 12th graders can participate in the college entrance exam. And I said, if I somehow magically become a 12th grader overnight, what's my chance getting to college? What percent of 12th graders could get into college this year? And my father told me only 1%.
Wow. Because
there were 10 times more applicants for universities in 1976 when the Cultural Revolution ended, because all the kids that finished high school in the preceding 10 years never got a chance to apply for college. So all of them were coming back to apply for college. So we have 10 times more applicants that year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I asked my parents, I said, you guys are crazy. How can I do that? Jump 3 years ahead and compete against other 12th graders for that 1% chance at college. Why can I wait for 3 years? And the mother said, well, how long did the government shut down colleges? I said, 10 years from 1966 to 76. She said, okay, we're in 1976, all right. They did reopen all the colleges, all right. But is there a guarantee they will not shut down college again next year for another 10 years?
That's smart that she thought that. That's very smart.
So, you know, for people who did not have freedom, when freedom came, however briefly it might be, they want to capture it because they know it may not come back again. So I had to do the impossible, you know, jumping ahead 3 years ahead and compete against other 12th graders for the 1% chance of going to college. But fortunately, my parents helped me. I worked very hard. So I got into University of Science and Technology, the MIT of China. And then in 1982, with $50 borrowed from a visiting American professor with an English-Chinese dictionary, I was dropped at National Airport, Washington, D.C. with that $50, with a Chinese-English dictionary, knowing no one in this country, could hardly speak English, even though I was nearly penniless, but I was happy. Why? I found the freedom.
How did you feel when you had to catch up on those three grades? You must have studied like 12 hours a day.
Yes, even more, probably like 16 hours a day. Yeah, I had to do that because, you know, my back was against the river. If I step back, I will fall into the river, meaning my only alternative is stay in the darkness, stay, you know, under the threat of not being able to find a job and everything. So it's like, I mean, that's the problem. Today's young people, they don't have to. So, you know, some of them are not as motivated.
So you came to the U.S. alone. That's crazy. But when you got into the university in China, how did you feel? Did you feel relieved or you just felt like, I have to keep going? I can't take a break. There's no rest. I keep going.
Yeah, I have to keep it going because I want to be able to come to America to study and explore, expand my range of life experience. So I knew that after finishing college, I would come to, you know, try to come to America.
After going through this initial difficult ordeal, did you feel more confidence in yourself, like you can do anything, or was that not in your mind yet?
Actually, it was very helpful because some, you know, I often get a question. I give this presentation to inner city kids, for example, and public school students. And the question come up a lot is that, Dr. Wang, you fought it. I want to fight. How can I learn to fight? And my answer is that you learn to fight. I mean, the ability to fight adversities and challenges is like a tree. It will not grow overnight, right? You take many years of nurturing. So if you want to overcome adversities and try to achieve something in life, I told the students always, you have to start learning how to fight, how to make extra effort and in school. And once you learn that habit, you'll become your habit.
Yeah, what did you do when you had to study so much? I mean, there must have been times where you said, oh, it's not worth it, or I can't do this, or I'll never make it. How did you overcome your self-doubt during those times?
That's a great question. I think probably two things. One is my parents, they instilled in me, they implanted in me ever since young, the desire to persevere, to work hard, don't give up. As I saw my parents, how they didn't give up during Cultural Revolution in difficult time. I was hungry half the time. We didn't have enough to eat, but they saw beyond the circumstance and believed this could be better tomorrow for their kids. So they worked the hardest to achieve that. So imprinting at young. But later on, when I was growing up and I learned to train my ability to fight through small things, And then gradually when you fought bigger things, your ability to fight is significantly increased.
Yeah, it's like lifting weights, I guess. You build up that muscle, fighting muscle. Okay. So you came to the U.S. with nothing, literally. What did you do? What was some of the first things you did here?
I had the camera was $50, so I didn't have money. And my parents spent 2 months of their monthly salary and bought me a three-piece suit. So I may be one of the poorest students on campus, but I was probably the best dressed with a and then I have nothing, just three-piece suit and a little bag of books. So people start laughing at me because people I realized was pretty informal on campuses. Here, I was walking around with three-piece suit, you know, could barely speak English. So I have to dress like American. By then, I only had $10. Because when I arrived, I was so hungry. I had 4 Big Macs. I was hungry and I almost killed myself by, you know, indigestion. So by then, I only had $10. How could you dress like American with only $10? Well, as is shown in the book and the movie, Salvation Army. So I got in, and with a quarter, I can buy a pair of pants, you know. So I came out. I dressed like Americans already, but I got more laughs. Why? Because that was 1982. I was dressed in clothes that people used to wear in the late 1960s. Bell-bottom pants and bright color shirts. So people joke that you just turned from yuppie to hippie, you know.
What school did you go to and you were accepted before you came?
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I first went to University of Maryland, College Park. I got my PhD in laser physics, and then I finished my postdoc at MIT. After I got the first doctorate degree, I decided I'm going to, you know, get my second doctorate degree, this time an MD. The first one was PhD in laser physics, because I want to be a unique laser eye surgeon, knowing not just medicine, which all medical doctors had learned medicine, but also know the technology. And this is increasingly more technical. Most doctors never have the opportunity to get in-depth training in technology.
Why did you pick laser physics, and then why did you want to be a doctor? What was it about the eye and about laser surgery that attracted you?
I wanted to be an eye doctor ever since before I came to America. My father is a doctor. But despite the fact he's a doctor, we were so poor. Half the time I was hungry. But I did want to be a doctor because his influence. And in terms of laser eye, I found that the eye is most fascinating. At Harvard Medical School in Boston, when I was studying medicine, I saw this lady who was born blind in her 50s. So all of a sudden, it occurred to me to ask her an interesting question. And I said, "You never seen." She said, "Never seen." I said, "Okay, what does red mean to you? What does blue mean to you?" You know, for someone who never seen. It's interesting, her answer was, red is something warm and fluffy. Blue, something cold and slippery. So she had replaced her absent vision sense with tactile temperature. So I realized that living through life as human being, if we could not see, we're missing a huge part of human experience. So from that point on, I want to devote myself to the cause of restoring eyesight for people, because I think it's the most exciting work.
That's really cool. So you felt called to work on the eye. Okay. So you went to, so you got a PhD in laser physics, and then you went right into an MD program?
Yeah, at Harvard, MIT. And I finished the MD in 1991. Actually, I invited my parents over from China because I'm very grateful. Without them, I would not have today. So I dedicated the field sight to my parents.
So, all right. So you became a doctor. And now what was your practice like? You know, did you start seeing patients right away? Like, what did you do early on?
Where do you live, Richard?
Oh, I live in Texas, in Austin. I'm New York originally.
I see. Yeah, that was my first trip here to Nashville, Tennessee. The reason I came here is because Vanderbilt University recruited me to be the founding director of Vanderbilt Laser Sight Center. So they gave me a deal that I cannot refuse. So I came to live in Nashville, working at Vanderbilt for many years, now private practice. And I think, you know, medicine is so fast developing that we need to have doctor trained not just in medicine, but also technology. I'm very blessed. I have both training, but I want to help other doctors. So over the years, I published 10 textbooks to help eye doctors, eye surgeons from around the world to improve their weak area, which is technology.
So what's the problem? If someone's a laser eye surgeon and they're trained on how to use the equipment, why do they need to know the physics behind it or what you know? Like, how has it helped you to know both the medical side, you know, the clinical side, plus the instruments themselves and exactly how they work?
Yeah, very good question again. You know, for most of the doctors, because they never had a formal laser in-depth training, The laser machine they use is like a black box to them. They use it to do the surgeries on patients' eyes. But the problem is, you know, sometimes when things are not going well in the laser machine, you don't know whether, you know, can be fixed or can be able to fix it. So I want to be able to take care of my patients and offer the best possible surgery, which is laser. for example, cataract surgery, only 5% of cataract surgeries in America are performed with laser. The other 95% remaining are still with a blade. And so I wanted to, you know, not only my adapting the latest technology laser, also helping all doctors improve the technology, the weak area technology. So I enjoy doing that because I think I want to share and I want to pay back what I've benefited as an immigrant coming to America, a country that offered me the opportunity and pursue happiness, and I'm grateful.
So did you feel like you got better outcomes than other laser eye surgeons because you knew, you know, the technology so deeply?
Yes, because all surgeons, you know, almost everyone, the laser is a black box. So when laser is not properly functioning, sometimes doctor didn't even know, you know what I'm saying? And then you create irreversible, you know, treatment result on your patients, which cannot be reversed. So I think
I've heard some laser eye surgeries, though, you know, when they go wrong, they'll create a prescription for the client that's unfillable, or they'll see glares, or they'll have other problems that are, you know, it fixes part of their sight, but there's a terrible trade-off where now they have other problems that can't be fixed.
Yes, we need to know medicine is not perfect. And, you know, but with medical training and the laser training, which is very rare. I'm probably the only laser eye surgeon in the world who has an MD and a PhD in laser physics. That does give me the opportunity to understand what's going on with the laser. And I formulate every single treatment plan myself, every one of the 55,000 laser vision corrections I've done. Always customize the machine to each individual patient. I have never had to perform the same surgery. Among the 55,000 surgeries I've done, Richard, over 4,000 were other doctors. So I've been very happy with that because it shows the medical, you know, establishment trust in my work.
Did you become known as like the person to go to? You know, absolutely have to get it right. Did you take on like tough cases other people couldn't take on? Like, what happened?
Yes, yes. I'm known as the doctor's doctor because I performed among the 55,000 surgeries, over 4,000 were all other doctors. And we have a clinic to deal with complications that are sent to us often by doctors from around the world to deal with those tough surgical outcome. So
that's really cool.
Yes.
How did you feel, you know, let's say 6 months into it or a year into it, as you were doing these surgeries and getting these results, like, did you feel a sense of relief or accomplishment, or like, where was your mind at as you started doing these? Did you feel like you were fulfilling your purpose, or, you know, how were you mentally?
Yes. I mean, you know, I work hard, and people sometimes ask us, why are you working so hard? The answer is very simple. I say, if you also have experience once or having nothing, having not, you would want to work hard also, you know, because you appreciate where you have more. And so I sharpened my skills in laser vision correction and performing. Oh, by the way, Richard, do you know that LASIK eye surgery is going out of date?
What do you mean going out of date? Is it being replaced by something new?
Yes, replaced by a new procedure called small incision LASIK or SMILE. And small incision, safer, less dry eyes, less complications. However, despite the fact that small incision version of LASIK is replacing the traditional LASIK, still 95% of doctors in America today are not using SMILE. Are still using the older technology.
And why is that? They feel like it's not robust, or what's the reason?
No, it's people are creature of habits, and all the practicing doctors, they were trained with blade in their residency. So they feel like they don't want to change. You know, it's not that they cannot learn, but they just don't want to learn. And also, honestly, for medical doctors who gone to medical school, you know, they don't have in-depth knowledge about the laser physics and engineering. So to them, it's, you know, it's some area they don't necessarily want to. Otherwise, they have to. So most of them stay doing the blades.
Okay. And how did you feel, again, personally about yourself and your life? And, you know, did you feel like you were doing what you were meant to do? You know, how did you feel early on? And, you know, were there any frustrations even early on when you were doing this?
I think I'm doing exactly what God wants me to do, because after becoming an ophthalmologist, I prayed to God. I said, what is it I need to use my long, hard-learned skill for? You know, Richard, can you guess how many years I was in school to study all these stuff? 31 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you said you came in 82, and by 91, you had your credentials, which is still not a lot of time.
Actually,
I had an MD.
Yeah, I didn't finish all the training, all the studying training until 1997. So if you start, you know, 6 years old, elementary school, that was 31 years. If we're starting freshman college, that was 20 years.
Sheesh.
Yeah. But so I was praying to Christ, what should I use my long, hard-earned medical skill for? And God told me that, you know, I feel that the answer came back in my prayer is to help those who need the most help, which are blind orphan children. The film site is about their story, helping blind orphan children from around the world. And I was trying to develop a technology, Richard, to help these kids, you know, suffer from blind eyes due to eye scarring, due to injury, trauma, and malnutrition. But then how do you do research, you know, I mean, that reduce scar? I realized that the unborn child does not scar. But how do you do research on unborn child, the fetus, without hurting a baby, right? So they say there's no common ground between science and faith. Fortunately, I remember as a Christian, I'm supposed to pray to God to help. So I stopped praying, asking God a single question. Is there a common ground between faith and science? And then I was working with a group of other scientists, and an idea occurred to us that unborn child can heal without scar. After birth, we heal with scar. Perhaps has to do with the fact that before birth, we were surrounded by this amniotic membrane, sac, that surrounds us, right? And that gives us the ability to heal without scar. So I collected many of those placentas after in the hospital after mother giving birth to children. The placenta is discarded. And I got those, brought those placenta back in the laboratory, start doing research, you know, take out the amniotic membrane. So I eventually invented the amniotic membrane contact lens and got the patents. And then I realized that, you know, I have got so much by, you know, coming here as an immigrant with nothing. I'm so grateful to America, and I want to do whatever I can to help. So I decided to donate my technology to the world. I put it online, the patent, and I went around the world about 20 years or so to about 55, 56 countries, teaching over 10,000 eye doctors how to use this new invention, amniotic membrane contact lens.
Wow. When you say it's just some technical questions, that's okay. What is the contact lens made of? Is it doped or seeded with certain compounds that appear in the amniotic membrane? Like, how does it work?
Oh, I peel off the amniotic membrane from the placenta, which is always discarded after kids is born anyway, process it, and eventually put on the underside of a contact lens. Then it's stuck together, and you put that on top of the eye. So we eventually basically end up covering the injured eye with a tent and recreating the before birth environment. And basically fooling the eye, thinking that, oh, we're not born yet. We should regenerate or heal without scar. And that was successful. Wow. And membrane contacts actually restored eyesight many patients. Then I decided I'm going to share, and I'm grateful to America to give me the opportunity. So I donated technology to the world. I put it online, my patent, and I went around the world to teach the technology. Today, amniotic membrane contact lens is a $5 billion industry. And
wow.
Doctors from nearly every nation are using it today, and millions of patients have had eyesight restored. The film Sight, based on my autobiography From Darkness to Sight, that's precisely the fascinating story of invention of amniotic membrane contact lens. And some friends said over the years, oh, man, you're stupid. You did not make any money yourself at all. In the process, I said, well, my answer is I'm not stupid, because number one, it's my answer to God's calling for me to do something that to help those who need the most help, blind orphan children, do our technology to help them. And number two, honestly, as a poor immigrant who came to this country with nothing, only $50, I'm very grateful to what America has given me, and I want to do what I can to pay back.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned faith. China, from what I understand, is not religious. You know, they're secular, I guess, especially during the time you were there. So how did you come to faith? You came to the U.S., were you an atheist? Like, what happened?
I came to this country as atheist. Richard, have you seen this movie, God's Not Dead?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's a movie that talk about this campus debate about evidence for existence of God. And it was written by my pastor, Dr. Rice Brooks, who later that was turned into a movie. In that movie, there's a Chinese student who came to America, fighting through Cultural Revolution, came to America with only $50 and as an atheist, and eventually became a believer. And that was me in that film, God's Not Dead.
It's about you. That's cool.
Yeah, it's inspired by my life story. So just like that student, I came to this country as an atheist. And then I got my PhD degree in laser physics. And then I was studying in medicine. I was trying to get my second doctorate degree, this time in medicine. I was studying the human eye structure at the Harvard Medical School in Boston, where I realized that my atheist worldview was in trouble because eye is so complicated, it is just not possible that it can form out of random, as atheists believe. So I kept on asking the professor a question. So he took me out to lunch and he said, what's across the street? I said, there's a car. He said, what's the difference between a car and human eye? I said, human eye is a lot more complicated. He said, okay. Can you imagine a bunch of pieces, random pieces of metal on the street assemble itself into a car? I said, no way. And he then said, how about human eye? Right there, he opened a window in my life, making me realize that the reason the human eye is so complicated but yet can form nearly flawlessly most of the time is because it did not form out of randomness. It was formed with a purpose, and that purpose is for vision. So there's a creator behind it. And going from there to eventually become Christian took me many more years. You know, so America is the nation that giving me the freedom and also faith. You know, Richard, you know who appreciates sight the most? Those used to be blind, right? Who appreciates freedom the most? Those who used to not have freedom. So Sight is a movie which will be released on May 24th, Memorial Weekend, in theaters across North America. It's basically a story of someone who used to be blind to share with all of the sighted folks today in America how precious sight is. Sight, the film, is about someone who used to not have freedom and come to share with us people here in America who always had freedom, how precious freedom is, and do not take for granted. And then you may say, what's the evidence that we are taking for granted the freedom we have in America? The evidence is that we are so polarized. We are so divided as a nation. We're so unwilling to work together across political aisles, racial divides, and ethnic divisions. Then you say, you mean if we forgot, you know, blessing, we take America for granted. That's why we end up to be polarized, unwilling to work together. Correct. It's like husband, wife. If you know, always there's a difference between husband and wife, but if you do not appreciate marriage, you're more likely to argue and yelling, shouting, hurting each other. But if you do appreciate marriage, given the same amount of difference, you're more likely to say, honey, I know.
I tell that advice to people that are younger, that have young kids or about to have a kid. I tell them that you got to work together.
Right.
If you don't work together with your wife, then everyone's miserable. So I told them that was one lesson we learned. Our kids are, you know, older teenagers now.
But. So my point is that the very fact that we are so polarized, we are so unwilling to work together as fellow Americans, is a symptom reflecting a deeper problem. And that deeper problem is we have taken what we have for granted in America, the freedom. You know, just think about immigrants like myself, refugees, put our lives on the line so we can get to the other side. What's on the other side? An opportunity to live in America. By living here, we always had freedom we have taken for granted, and that taken for grantedness is reflected by the unprecedented polarization division of our nation. So Sight is basically its rallying cry to bring the message of the need to reappreciate America to this country, to all Americans. And it was a film about freedom, about faith, and it's about the need to find common ground.
Yeah, and I believe I heard you say on another interview it took, 10 years to get this movie out there. Why did it take so long? What is the background of making the movie?
Oh, they have to raise the money. It's not my film. It's a studio film. They had to raise the money. And when they finally, after 10 years, they made the film, it was universally, across the board, rejected by all major distributors in Hollywood. Digital, you know, Netflix, theatrical, Sony's, others, because faith film is not the priority. And also, as Asian American films, it does not have the box office predictors, such as Kung Fu and Ancient Dynasty stuff, you know? So they look like the film will be buried. Just like Sound of Freedom, another film released by the distributor now, Angel Studio, last year was buried by Hollywood for another film about freedom of faith, buried by Hollywood by 5 years before it was finally released. So I decided to take the matter into my own hands. I took the film around the United States, travel every weekend to over 40 states. They're showing the film free, bringing the film to Americans to know about the film and also to pray about it. And eventually, God answered prayer on February 2nd. Angel Studios, which distributed The Chosen, The Bible Story, and The Sound of Freedom last year, decided to distribute the film. So now we have uphill battle because theaters still believe a film without violence, sex, drugs will not make money. So they only give us Sight, the film, only one weekend. You know, May 24th, Memorial Day weekend, and that's it. And if you visit angel.com/sight, you will see there's only 1 week, the shortest possible period that theater will allow this film to show. So it is up to us now, all of us as Americans, in an unprecedented, polarized, divided nation. Do we want to bring our nation together? Do we want to hear the message of hope and freedom? If we do, then we need to work together. Buy the tickets now at angel.com/sight and put this film on the big silver screen and let it go into second week, third week. Let all Americans to see that we're living in a great country. We need to appreciate America by being willing to work together across our differences.
You know, that's great. What criteria is needed for the film to last beyond a weekend? Do they tell you, like, if you sell a certain amount, we'll keep it?
Yeah, they apparently, you know, you got to sell hundreds of thousands of tickets. And right now, it's a fight, uphill battle, because, again, this is not a film with sex, violence, drugs. This is a true life story of immigrants. So we need more people to buy tickets at ngo.com/site. And actually, there's group to sell now. At least 10 people, you can get like 50% off if you have at least 10 people. So we encourage people to recognize this is a great opportunity to send a message to Hollywood, to America, that freedom and faith and the need to overcome all polarization and find a common ground is what America needs the most right now to address our societal's main problem, you know, gun violence, opioid crisis, environmental disasters, racial tension, poverty, education, you know, economy, healthcare, right? So we need to address problems that our country is facing, but our leaders are not. They are focused on power and control, right? So we need to support a film that brings about the most pressing issue of our nation, that is the need to overcome our polarization, to find the common ground, to solve real American problems.
Hey, it sounds like you never rest. So this movie is out. What other projects are you working on, or what's next?
I have a common ground nonprofit organization to study how to help people find the common ground. And I will continue our foundation work to continue to help blind orphan children. And I also run the Minority Chamber of Commerce. African-Americans, Latin-Americans, Asian-Americans work together to help each other business and help America. So a lot to do. But main thread of all the commonality of all my work is I'm an immigrant. I'm very grateful to America, a nation that given me the opportunity, the freedom and faith. And I want to send my message to America that we live in a great country that's appreciated. Loving America, appreciating America is not just something we just say. We have to do it. And the action proving that we do love this country is, are we willing to work together?
What kind of feedback have you gotten so far from people watching the film and all your work over the years? Is it, you know, now that you have this call for people to come together and to appreciate, you know, our country, which I think is fantastic. Have you gotten a lot of positive feedback, or have you gotten mixed feedback?
Yeah, the response of people who have seen the film with the national tour, the free film tour that I did over 12 months, over 40 states, has been extremely positive, because people find this is, you know, it's like a thirsty land, we need water. And especially for young people, encourage them, motivate them that despite the fact you're materially, you're more comfortable than your parents, but if you set a higher goal in life, if you're inspired to set a higher goal in life beyond you what you normally do, then young people will be motivated again. As a Christian, I want to atheist skeptics to come to see the film, to experience God's power, that God wants science and faith to work together. I want all Americans to come together, watch the film, that is, speak to the essence, what's the best for our nation. That is, we as Americans can work together, can love each other despite the differences, can work together for greater good of building up this country.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Okay, so May 24th, coming up, you know, imminently. And it's in theaters, like you said, nationwide, so people can look, you know, like Google or whatever, and they should see the movie come up in their listings, so they can go to it, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, May 24th, Memorial Weekend, in theaters across North America, United States, and Canada. So we need people to step up to help put this film on the big silver screen, help keep it longer. By visiting, you can visit ngo.com/site. You will see the theaters that show on site right now. And if you find a theater nearby you, which is not showing site, all you have to do is get a bunch of friends together for that theater. When they get certain minimal number of calls, they will open up for the movie site. That's how it works these days, big data. So, and buying our tickets to theaters, and just show that all of us do care what will bring our nation together, rather than a deadly spiral polarization, see our country get hurt.
Oh, this last question or so, what do you feel like I know it's a broad question. What have you learned? What things have you discovered, maybe just in the last 5-10 years, that you just never imagined you could have known? It took decades for you to realize. Any big realizations you've had?
One bigger realization is that if we leave it to human nature for power and control, we're not going to be uniting as a nation. That's a human weakness. So the only way to rise above the deadly spiral of polarization, to find the common ground, to work together again, we have to heed a higher calling above human nature. We, as a Christian, is to follow in the example of Jesus Christ, who is the ultimate common ground seeker. The Bible said, "The blessed are the peacemakers." So I realized that no matter how long the freedom has been around in America, we're still vulnerable as a nation. We can lose it. So we should not take for granted the freedom and faith we have in America. And we should recognize that we are able to build up our nation is because our willingness and the capability to love each other, the compassion, the empathy, and to be willing to work together and put the interests of this nation, and for me, God as a Christian, above the interest of any political party.
Yeah. Have you tried to get the movie and seen in other countries as well, maybe even China? Or is it just a calculated effort to do it here?
Yeah. The first step is you got to be successful in the United States. Right now, if you visit angel.com/site, you will see across the United States, it's only being shown the small, shortest amount of time possible, only 1 week. That will be done. Will be shut off. So if people don't step up to pre-purchase ticket right now at angel.com/site, the film will not last at all. 1 week, you blink, it disappear. And then the Netflix will never pick up the digitally, because Netflix will never pick up a film that has failed in theaters. And the movie will not be able to get out of the United States, because no other country will want to buy a film which has failed in the U.S. initial release. And getting China or not, that's a totally different matter. So main point is this. If we do appreciate freedom and faith we have, we do appreciate this country, we want to build up America, and let's pay attention to this voice, this message sent by an immigrant who used to not have freedom, just like a voice, a message for someone who used to be blind to tell us how precious sight is. This message for someone who used to not have freedom to tell us that we do need to appreciate the freedom we have in America by being more willing to work together to address our nation's problems that we're facing, rather than being so fixated on power and control.
Oh, excellent. Well, Dr. Wang, thank you so much for all you've done, all that you do. And, I think this will be a great movie. I'm definitely going to go see it. And I hope listeners will go and support the movie, because it's rare movies like this are made. You know, who needs another Avengers, part 46? So I definitely encourage people to check this out. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Richard, for your interview, and appreciate you allowing me the opportunity today. Appreciate it.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at findinggeniuspodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.